Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Nerdcast. I'm Devin Dixon, here joined as always with Justin Tapp.
Hello.
And manning the boards is Kelly Hardigan.
Hello, sorry about that guys.
Well, it's been a long weekend. This is coming to you a little late because we had our Thanksgiving holiday here. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good, but here's a hint. Thanksgiving leftovers, make sure they are properly refrigerated.
Oh, boy. Is that what happened? So you got sick.
I'm thinking that's what happened.
Oh, man.
I was real sick.
Oh, but no.
Other than that, it was great.
Well, other than the vomiting, it was great. Mine was pretty good. I didn't do much other than, you know, build this set we're in.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We've got these new digs. This is definitely a DIY on the super cheap kind of affair, but hopefully as we get more subscribers and likes on our videos and all of that stuff, we'll be able to feel more confident about dropping more money on this production. So if you're watching this and you haven't subscribed yet, hit the subscribe, hit the like, share the link to anyone and everyone. I don't care if they like us or not. I don't care if they're even fans of this shit we're talking about. Give it to them anyways. Invade people's privacy with this. So, Kelly, how was your Thanksgiving?
No, it was good. I went to visit my parents. I had fun the guy you can't stand sort of thing.
Yeah.
We had a kind of incident with that, but no, I'm not going to
go into
that.
You're in a public forum. Remind you. You'd be like, Uncle Steve, he sucks balls. I hate his fucking ass.
No.
It's like, dude, Uncle Steve can see this.
If you know Uncle Steve, like, share this link with Uncle Steve. Make sure he gets it so that he knows exactly what Kelly thinks about him.
He can talk about it in the comment section.
Uncle Steve, you're watching this. Add your comment. Let us know what you think. Are you a shitbag? Are you racist?
There is no Uncle Steve.
His name might be Steve. I never asked him. It'd be funny if it was.
Not.
It's not. But, okay, fine. No bagging on mythical Uncle Steve anymore. But it sounds like we all had a really good holiday. I hope everybody out there did too. I posted a review of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I finally finished that on the PlayStation 4. So if you were curious about that game, we've got that one on the channel now. Give it a watch. See what you think. You should definitely be playing that game.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna play it. I thought your review was really useful because it had all, you know, cool info. But the last bit of it was hilarious. You're like, yeah, you know, you're like, I should give this a caveat. Like, Uncharted is not really my favorite game, and I'm really not that into Star Wars. you're like, if you like Uncharted and Star Wars, you might love this game. And
Literally,
there's like another YouTuber who's like, Uncharted is my favorite game, and Star Wars is my favorite thing. And he's like, this is my favorite game ever.
So, like, I think it's very important when you're reviewing anything to add that kind of context, because all art is subjective, right? So if I'm going to sit here and like give my opinion on something, like my opinion is worth a damn, then I'm going to at least try to give that context to it, because I'm not going to say it's a crap game or an awesome game or even a mediocre game. Like, the way that I took it in was painted by my experiences with the games that it's most related to. So if you love those games, you're probably going to really love The Fallen Order. If you don't love those games, then you might still like it. But, I liked it. I liked it a lot. So
It's funny. I think that music reviews should do that. I think the guy reviewing the record should immediately say, like, these are my top five albums.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I was reading a review of a Ben Folds 5, their last record. It came out in, like, 2012 or something. And it was the most frustrating review because the guy talks about the album, and you're like, okay, this guy didn't seem to like it. Maybe, you know. And then he gets to the end and just starts shitting on their best records. And it's like,
Wait a second.
I'm getting the impression that you don't like Ben Folds 5. Why in God's name are you reviewing this record?
Right, exactly.
You
know what I mean? At least, like, start it off top with, by the way, the album that's widely recognized as their best, I don't like it.
I hate everything these guys have done.
Right.
This sounds pretty much like everything else they've done, and thus I hate this as well.
Exactly.
You know?
All right, anyway. So let's roll into these news stories. Then after that, we're going to talk about the latest episode of The Mandalorian, episode 4. Which one was this titled? Sanctuary, I believe. Yeah, episode 4, Sanctuary. So, Kelly, what's on the docket?
All right, so a few updates real fast on stories that were just from last week, funny enough.
Awesome.
So apparently, you know, we're looking at the Tesla video, which was funny with the glass, but The Verge reported that a few days ago it had 200,000 orders, and since we found out, add another 50,000 to that. So they're already at 250,000 orders for the Cybertruck.
So wait, so the pre-order, that what does that constitute? That's like people put down, what, $100
for? It just says deposits. I'd have to look that up exactly.
Okay.
It's not a lot.
It's not a lot, I don't think. But it's still, it's fascinating that 250,000 plus have already. Let's pump the brakes a little bit here. Like, I think that there were, I always thought there was going to be a subset of like hardcore Tesla enthusiasts who were going to love the idea of the Cybertruck, regardless of what it looked like or how it performed. They were just going to jump on board. So, like, I think that 200,000 for a pre-order, especially if it's only like $100 down on a $40,000 truck, that's not. That seems right to me.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised by the number, but I'm not taken aback by it.
I don't even think it's Tesla enthusiasts. I think it's people that want a truck that is bulletproof, because supposedly the body panels are bulletproof. It goes from 0 to 60 in 6.5 seconds. And
right.
And pull an F-150 up a hill
right.
while the F-150 is going the other direction.
Right.
Matter what it looks like. People are like, "That's me, man. The apocalypse is coming, and that's
that's the real thing there." Like, so there was an interesting post. I think it was posted by someone on Gizmodo or IO9 or one of those blogs where, and I read it, and it was something I hadn't really thought about before.
Yeah.
Like the idea that what this is selling is the vision of a dystopian future. And
it's definitely selling that a little bit, for sure.
For sure.
I mean, it's patterned after the cars in Blade Runner.
It's patterned after the cars in Blade Runner. They're bulletproof. The windows are supposed to be bulletproof. I mean, and it syncs up with everything we know about the mindset of Silicon Valley types, like a bunch of super rich dudes buying Peter Thiels and whatnot, buying your apocalypse bunkers and shit like that. Like people that have this hardcore belief that bad shit is on the way. And the idea that the Cybertruck, which is basically a tank at this point, that this is
an extremely fast tank.
An extremely fast and extremely affordable tank. You know, like the idea that rather like this is how this is like we it kind of goes in line with like the bulletproof clothing that they're selling to kids now, and we're instead of trying to fix the shit that's going to cause us to go into the apocalypse, we're really leaning into just going into the apocalypse.
Instead of buying the world a Coke and teaching the world to sing, we're going to double down on beating off your rivals
with
a mace made from a human femur.
Like this is just diving right into Mad Max territory.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing though. I mean it's not. Even if it's just not like, your doomsday prepper people, which I'm not. I mean, I think there's an element. What it's saying is that the fact that the car looks so radical in some ways, like the bug is a feature. The car is
radical.
It's unmistakable.
One of the selling functions is bulletproof.
No, that's my point. It's unmistakable what it is.
Yeah.
When you're in that car and you're driving, you are telling
everyone
else.
They should be selling
this
shit to soldiers in Afghanistan.
They're telling everyone else on the road. You know, I'm essentially bulletproof.
Yeah.
I could take your car and I could pull it
up a hill.
Up a hill while you're going the other direction, no problem. And there's not a lot you could do about it, Cybertruck. You know what I'm saying? I think that and it's sophistication.
By the way, I have a feeling that people that have that accent aren't the ones that are signing up for the Cybertruck.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think you're exactly right. That's what I was going to say. Not to stereotype.
But.
Yeah, exactly. This is Blade Runner styling, I think, appeals to an extra layer of sophisticate that, don't have truck nuts hanging from their trucks. But even the truck nut people are like, "Well, goddamn, man,
They're going to get a blocky pair of truck nuts. They're going to have these sharp angle truck nuts.
like squares. That's what we need. Cyber truck nuts. And they're just squares. two
blocks.
Oh, man.
Big chrome blocks.
The fact that we've given that to the internet today.
Copyrighted internet.
Exactly.
We got a patent on this.
That's
right
memeable.
Now.
That's memeable. Cyber
this
truck
is what
nuts.
We're doing.
Yeah, we've given
brought
that
to you by the
people.
Nerdcast Cyber Truck Nuts.
We've given
big
it to
chrome
people.
Blocks. All right, I'm for it. You know what? You just sold me on the Cybertruck. I'm going to go buy one. Going to get one all black. I'm going to have big black truck nuts. That's how it's going to go down, America. Let's go.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, what's our next story?
Well, I just want to throw one more funny thing I just thought of.
What's
I saw a quote in the most Musk quote possible. He wanted to brag and just to make sure everyone know this all happened with no advertising or paid endorsements. So that just seemed like the most must thing. But no, we don't have to go on about that.
He is his own advertisement, honestly. Like the
for better or worse, and worse, for better and worse.
This is part of the whole doofus argument I was making last time. Is like when the public persona that he has, and he definitely wants to be quote unquote Tony Stark. Like he can come out with this flamboyant reveal of the Cybertruck or whatever else he wants to do, Hyperloop and SpaceX and all of that. And just the nature of who he is and what he's trying to do, which speaks to your point on him that he's always taking big swings, you know, that's as much advertisement as he's really going to need for any of his products, honestly. He's always going to have that hardcore group of dudes who are going to want his shit, and that's going to be enough to get everybody else outside of that group at least interested in it, so.
Yeah, we live in a – it's really weird. Like, we live in a reality where – someone can just like say they're a genius a lot, and people are like, "Well, obviously he's a genius."
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and, you know, I don't know if
that's what was W's quote? In my line of work, you gotta repeat yourself often.
Yeah,
you
well, I mean,
catapult
you know.
The propaganda.
Well, I mean, look at Kanye West. I mean, it's just I'm a genius. People are like,
"I guess he's a genius."
I guess he's a genius, or he wouldn't say it all the time. Look at Trump.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I'm a billionaire. You know what I mean?
Obviously,
all evidence points
to
the contrary.
Yeah,
people are like, "He must be rich. Why would he say it?" It's kind of what Hitler said. If you're gonna lie, go for the big lie.
People
are like, "Why would he lie about that?"
It's a little bit of both, right? So it's like, you know, at some point, and this is just a real weird aside that nobody's gonna get, but at some point, we're gonna have to have like a documentary or a discussion or something over Viper Scorpion. But it's like if you could tell a big enough lie, but you could also like do a little bit of dazzle dazzle on the side that kind of hints at the lie being a little bit truthful.
Dude, Theranos, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's the blood company, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the world we're living in now. And maybe we always lived in it.
I think we always lived in it.
You know?
I think that's always been the world we've
maybe
lived
that's
in.
One of the great myths of the American dream.
Is yeah.
That, you know,
it's the great American grift.
Yeah, you don't need
you
anything.
You fake it until you make it.
Exactly. You know what I mean? You don't need anything inside the black box. It doesn't have to work. It's literally Schrodinger, you know, his cat. You know, it's like if you'd say the box works, people are like, the box works, you know? I mean, you know.
Why would they have any reason to think it doesn't?
Yeah.
All right, what's the next story?
All right, this one, just a quick little also update. Just kind of funny. We talked about the DOJ ruling on the theaters can be owned by studios again. Netflix already swooped up and reopened the closed Paris Theater in New York City.
Yeah, man, it's happening already.
Again, this goes back to the thing. I mean, it's actually cool that they did that.
I kind of like the Netflix one as well.
In this instance, you know, it's tough, man. That theater would be like a department store.
It's a historic theater, right?
Yeah.
It was the last one screen theater in the entire city that was still open.
Wow. So, you know, yeah, in this particular instance, it's cool that they did that for certain. And I feel like that was a strategic move definitely on their part. Like, if we're going to get into the world of having our own theaters, the first thing we need to do is make sure that our first theater is seen as a good thing, as a public good. Like, we saved a historic theater. Cool. But, like, it's not going to be too long before Netflix theaters are in strip malls, you know, that are the brand new things being built. So it's interesting that so far, like, I don't even know, have the Paramount dissent decrees, have those officially been? I don't think that ruling has been.
Not that I can officially. I just see that they're. It's in the process. I don't know exactly how that's working out.
I guess they just rolled the dice.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, that's the thing. We live in a town, you know, we're in Austin. It just seems like something cool gets destroyed like almost on a weekly basis here.
Right.
You know, something that was awesome. You know what I mean?
It's I would almost say that is somewhat maybe uniquely Texan. Maybe uniquely, I don't know if they do this very often in like Boston or something, a city that's 500 some odd years old. It has all sorts of historic landmarks.
I'm sure
here and there.
It's happened some.
I'm sure it's happened
but
some,
I mean, like,
too.
Dude,
but like
the poorhouse?
In Texas.
It's just infuriating. You drive down there, and it's just this shitty condo, and like they make the poor house is now this like shitty bar in the bottom shit patio. And it's like to think about how cool that place was.
And it's only a couple feet away from where the original poorhouse was.
And that whole like farmer's market complex that had been there since like 1919, they just bulldozed that whole thing.
I like that farmer's market too.
Without any care whatsoever, it's like, yeah, fuck you, that's why. You know what I mean? And there was nothing anyone could do to stop them. And they didn't even like, I mean, and it's like, I don't know, man. It's like the Dog and Duck is a fucking parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting like into serious kind of local Austin shit, but it's just like.
Well, I'm sure it relates to a lot of people in their area. But I think that's a part of what makes it, you know, quote unquote cool that Netflix was able to at least save this particular theater. But I mean, the fact that they are able to do that is, I mean, that's the harbinger of what the Paramount Descent Decree is being pulled back. You know, what that means.
I'm not really sure Netflix is the one we have to really be afraid of.
No.
I think it's Disney.
I think it is Disney, and it's probably also like, you know, I don't even know what their biggest, I don't even know if they have anything, a competitor that.
Closest is Warner Brothers.
It would have to be Warner Brothers.
I actually saw, there's an excellent video right now on a YouTube channel called Just Right. I highly recommend all his video essays. They're excellent. But he's talking about the Disney monopoly.
Yeah.
And he was saying that 38% of all box office revenue.
You know what? You mentioned that. I looked it up, but I actually posted it on our Twitter. You should follow our Twitter. It's at YNerdcast. That stat, it's actually like, I think it was 23 or 26%.
Is that for 2019? Because this is for 2018.
It was either for 2018 or 20. I think it was 2018 actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up. I'll post a link to that article in the description of this video. But I did actually look
in
that
the video.
Up.
He said 38%, and I've read 38% somewhere.
Okay.
Elsewhere. So I don't know which one it is, but I've definitely seen it twice. But he said that Warner Brothers was their closest competitor. And it was like 13 or 12%. It's less than half.
Wow.
You know? And that's his point. He was just like, so, I mean, and Disney has been, they've done this before. I mean, they tried with The Last Jedi to kind of, you know, strong arm theaters, like how long, what screens they could run it on and how long they had to run it in their biggest theater in any complex.
Right.
They had to run it for 4 weeks. And, you know, it really hurts theaters. I think they ended up backing off. We talked about this last week. But, I mean, you've got a company that owns Pixar, they own Star Wars, and they own Marvel. Your big
productions. Yeah.
And it's like, if they want to have their own theaters and say we can only see those theaters there, you know, they can really, really hurt theaters. Because your Star Wars, your Marvels, your Pixars, I mean, like this year alone, it's like, think about it. Endgame was this year.
Endgame. We're going to have Rise of Skywalker.
Frozen 2 is killing it.
There was also, what was the Pixar? Was there a Pixar one?
There was. I haven't seen it yet, or maybe I did see it. No, Toy Story 4.
Toy Story 4, huge. Yes, of course.
It was great. I saw it. I mean, just think about all that. Not, you know, theaters not being able to show those movies. Those movies are showing at a Disney theater, and you're going to go see it at a Disney theater. And honestly, people aren't going to care. They're not going to go to the theater and see it.
Yeah, if they want to go to see it in the theater, they're going to go to see it in the theater.
And that, I mean, that could put the hurt on theaters. I mean, you know, maybe they could move into that, but Netflix doesn't own.
They don't.
You know,
yeah,
all these properties.
They're still very dependent on building their own roster of IP, which I don't like. What is like? I guess they have some stuff now, like their television shows. I don't think they've released a movie that has really taken off in a theater the way
Bird Box was a hit on Netflix.
Quotes on that, because they never released their numbers.
Exactly, yeah.
So we don't really know. Like, if it was a theatrical release, then maybe we'd be able to look at box office numbers.
Yeah.
But, you know, because we don't have access to what Bird Box actually did, we can just speculate based on, you know, the internet chatter for it. But even Bird Box, like, does that come close to what a Disney movie would do?
Who knows?
I would have guessed not. Probably not. I mean, I don't think Disney has anything or Netflix has anything.
Oh, I don't think they have anything like Endgame or Rise of Skywalker or any or even like a Pixar movie or like, you know, Frozen or any of that, you know.
Yeah. It's going to be tough times out there.
And it's funny how how recent this is for Disney. I mean, Bob Iger, I mean, as far as like the world of business, you know what I mean? The guy is really killed it. I mean, they've absorbed all these companies. I mean, think back to, I was reading an article and it was about,
how long has he been there? Do you know by any chance?
I don't off the top of my head. I want to say he's been there since the early 2000s.
Okay.
When Eisner, I think at the end of the 90s and the early 2000s, Eisner passed the torch. But if you look back to like 2012, I think, is when John Carter from Mars came out. Yeah. It was one of the biggest flops in the history of, you know, and in 2012, you know, I think they had either just about to buy Disney or hadn't bought it yet. Maybe they had bought Marvel yet, but they, you know what I mean? They had Pixar, you know, so they had that. But I mean, their box office that year, I mean, just think about it, they didn't have any, and now it's just like every movie, every, you know, and Marvel just kicks out the movies and people love those movies. I mean, like,
I mean, yeah, that's why that they can afford, they afford themselves the ability to have just like a pretty much a hit per quarter based on the fact that they just bought everything. Like they're not, it's not like they have some new type of strategy or model on how to develop films or anything like that. I mean, Marvel Studios was doing their thing and they were excelling at it, and then Disney bought them. So now it's just part of Disney.
Yeah, when did they buy them though? You know what I mean?
I can't remember the exact date.
Yeah, Kelly, you can hook that up, because I'd be interested to see. Because the thing is what Disney – one of the things Disney has done is
– and I'm not saying that Disney doesn't know how to make great movies.
Well, yeah, but the thing is they haven't run this shit into the ground. Now, certain people about Star Wars would say they have. Yes. You know, but to me, it's like, you know, other than Bob Iger insisting Solo open when it did, you know, all those movies have made a fuck ton of money.
Right.
You know? I mean, to me, if Solo comes out in Christmas of that year, it might have come close to $1 billion as well. Instead of Mary Poppins Returns, which, you know, I think so long story short, I think that, you know, it could be a harbinger of things to come. I think in this instance, it's really cool that they would keep that.
In this particular instance, it's cool. It's definitely a harbinger of things to come. I guess we'll probably talk about this again more in maybe the near future.
Well, it'll be really interesting to look back on these talks,
it would be
in like 5 years when it's like, you know,
when we're all working for Disney or Amazon.
I wish I could work for Disney. Give me a call, guys. I'll do anything for you guys.
All right, what's the next story? Oh, Kelly, do we know when Marvel was purchased?
I have a few dates I was looking up several dates. Iger named CEO in 2005. He was previously with the company in another position, but CEO in 2005. Marvel was acquired in 2009.
Okay.
So not even that long ago.
Lucasfilm was 2012, and I'd say about 5 more years till he owns us. About.
Yeah, Fox was just a couple years ago.
Yeah,
so. That was,
yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Not too long before he owns us. Probably already does, we just don't know it yet.
Yeah, okay, and next story, it's kind of somewhat similar. Disney purchased item, or property. How much do you want to believe famous composer, musician, Danny Elfman is hearing that The Simpsons might finally come to an end after this season? He says, I don't know for a fact, but I've heard it will end this year. I don't know. What do you think?
It's kind of strange to hear that from the composer, but I guess
it is.
And how much is he actually doing with it these days? That's the part of the part. Why would he maybe know this?
Don't know.
It could be that he went to take a loan out on his royalty advance, and they were like, wait a minute. I don't know. It's a joke. I have no idea why he would know. It could be that he just heard a rumor.
Probably heard a rumor from somewhere. I mean,
I'm sure he knows people.
You know? Oh, for certain. Obviously. It's not something that I think – like, I think this is what? There are 31 seasons in at this point?
Yes.
Like – I'm okay if this rumor turns out to be true. Like, I really haven't watched the show in probably well over a decade. I mean, not any of the new episodes. I watch the old episodes just about every night, but
it's funny. I'm the same way. I stopped watching The Simpsons regularly, like appointment. Like, I watched every episode when it came on new.
Yeah.
Somewhere in like 2003, maybe.
Right. Around the same. That must have been like season 12 or so. 13
maybe. I'll occasionally catch an episode, even newer episodes, and there will be something in there that that will make me laugh. I'll think, it's pretty funny.
Good for about one laugh per episode.
I don't really know if it's the show. I mean, there's actually a really great video essay on The Simpsons, and it talks about the difference in the humor now versus in the early.
I think I watched that, actually.
It's really good. They do an example of like a joke, and the guy shows the joke as it was in a recent episode of The Simpsons, then shows the joke as it would have been in an early episode of The Simpsons. No, he does. He's just guessing, but
right.
And it's significantly better when he applies, kind of that rubric to it. But it's interesting. I don't think the show. People say, "Oh, it sucks now." I don't really think it sucks. I just think that the novelty of that show.
It's definitely a relic from a bygone era.
Yeah, like, it's just really worn off.
Man. Yeah,
you know, I think that it's probably not as sharp as it used to be, just because Jesus, what you know,
31 seasons. What are you gonna do in season 32 that wasn't already done in season 28 and 15? And you know,
and it's like you got like with The Simpsons, I think. As with a lot of shows, you know, but a show is like singular as The Simpsons was in its time. You know, it's like you're looking for their take on stuff that was more right. familiar. You know, it's like their episode where, you know, this happens. And there's episodes, you know, where, you know, Homer has a swear jar or he gets fired or these early season episodes where that's the first time they're tackling that and it's their take on it. And But as you start to move into season 12 and 13, it's like
funny because it's really I think it might be like I don't even know what the second longest running show would have been. It must have been a 17 or 18 seasons at the most.
If you don't count SNL, I guess.
If you don't count SNL, but even SNL is a great example of like what when you have like a property that exists multi-generationally, you know, like. The comedy that made people laugh in the 70s is a lot different than the comedy that makes people laugh now.
Yeah.
So even when SNL might be the same show, but when you have younger writers writing to a crowd that is of a younger generation, the jokes are definitely a lot different.
Yeah.
I was listening to an episode of Conan O'Brien's podcast where he was talking to one of the Monty Python cast members. He was talking about how different comedy is written from between now and when he was doing Monty Python, and it was really interesting hearing like one of the things he was talking about is or one of the things Conan brought up was that like Monty Python revolutionized the idea that sketches don't have to have endings, you know, like and a lot of what I think a lot of comedy writing may be doing now for SNL and skit shows like that is that it's just a different audience that it plays to, that it's written for, and especially with a show like The Simpsons, like SNL or skit shows like that, you know, you have a lot more room to work with because you don't have recurring characters.
Yeah, cast members rotate. Old guys going out, new guys coming in.
So it's a lot easier for a show like that. It's a lot easier for a show like that to adapt generationally. But for Simpsons, you have five core characters set in a town where you've had all sorts of crazy shit happen storyline-wise from 1989 or whatever up until 2019 and you have writers that are dramatically different in their approach on comedy still trying to come up with fresh shit for characters that are not fresh at all. So like it's almost as if like I would say that they're doomed from the start. Like they're almost set up to fail in a certain sense.
Yeah, they totally are. I'm amazed that the show still manages anything funny at all in this amount of time. And I'm sure they've repeated themselves, ad nauseum in certain ways at this point. I mean, again, it's just in the first act of the show. It's I think where I started to tune out was in the first act of the show, just the craziest shit would happen.
Like, right.
They would like go to Japan or something.
Well, it wasn't even just that the craziest shit would happen. It would be shit that you didn't see on TV in a cartoon form before. Like that was the big draw for me for Simpsons when I was a kid. It was like, this is a cartoon that I wasn't allowed to watch, for like the first couple seasons at least, you know, because I was 8 years old or something when it first came out.
Yeah, I was a little older. It was never like verboten in my household.
But for me, so like the lure and draw of that, I guess South Park was the next evolution of that, you know, like the lure and draw of a cartoon that is doing all of this edgy taboo shit. you know, and finding new ways to make me laugh and think about things. Like, you can only do that for so long before you become rote. You know?
Yeah, in a way, I think South Park actually got better the longer it was on.
Well, South Park changed its approach in a very dramatic way.
Those guys, I think at first the gag was just like, they're kids and they're cussing.
Yeah,
they're,
exactly. You know?
And as they got older and more sophisticated,
South Park changed, more of a social commentary show.
And became a lot better. So I think The Simpsons is it'll be, you know, it'll be sad not to be deal watch the Treehouse of Horror, you know, because there's a part of me that likes the Halloween episode of any show. I just love the idea of the Halloween episode, because as a kid, that was always, you know, when there were really only four channels to watch, and you know, all your TV shows you liked came on those four channels, every show would have a Halloween episode,
right?
And you get to watch it, and it was near. So I mean, you know,
I do miss those Family Matters Halloween episodes.
Did you? There's an episode, I guess, where Urkel has a puppet. Did you ever see that episode?
I'm certain I have.
It aired one time. They banned it after that because the puppet murders the entire family or something like that.
Oh man, we got to find that episode.
Yeah, I actually saw it.
They did a lot of weird shit with Urkel. We could talk about that at some other point.
But you know,
long story short, on this,
sad
one,
to see it go. But
it sucks if it happens. But at the same time, I kind of want it to happen because, you know, give some breath to some other creators. Let's see what that time slot could be freed up for. I love The Simpsons.
It had a great run.
Had an amazing run.
I mean, they got the rumors, their chance.
If the rumors are true, then, you know, salute to you. Let's move on.
I want
to
say that show probably almost more than any other show affected my sense of humor. And not a day goes by that I don't make a joke from The Simpsons, reference The Simpsons in some way, even ways that I don't even realize as I do it.
Right.
You know what I mean? I say like, oh, he was turning into a monster or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I'll do something like that on any day. And so the show, I mean, I don't think them going off the air in any way kind of like tarnishes its importance culturally.
Oh, no.
You know, I just think that, you know, it's probably time.
Yeah.
And let's see what happens. Maybe they can take that and some new show will come up that'll be in its own way to this time what The Simpsons was
and we've seen shows come up in the same time, you know, whether it's Family Guy or Bob's Burgers or, you know, I mean, it's
Adventure Time was another show that, like, I didn't even get hip to until right before it was going off the air, and I was able to binge almost the entire show, and I was like, wow, what a brilliant show, you know, what an amazing show. And then they canceled it and I was like, ah, what a drag, you know. And then they're bringing it back on HBO Max. They're doing like four movies on HBO Max.
Oh, rad. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. So that'll be really great. And, you know, and maybe they'll do something like that with Simpsons. Like, oh, wow, they'll go back and they'll just have smaller.
Do a Simpsons movie too.
Yeah. You know, where they can, where it's a little more focused and not so outlandish, and they can really kind of, you know, bring their A game. I don't know. But I think it's probably time.
All right. What's our next story?
Okay, Variety had a long list of things up for upcoming DC movies, which there are several things to go over here, but first, the only one we know for sure is Birds of Prey, which is coming up in a few months, and The Suicide Squad, which is sometime next year, are both going to be rated R. The Michael B. Jordan as Superman rumors are coming back, but J.J. Abrams, that happened a while back, maybe it's revised, we don't know. And then a Green Lantern TV series with a possible movie, and I just want a good buddy cop, Lethal Weapon style Green Lantern story, because I love that book sometimes. So what's up?
Okay, so DC is a weird thing
for
me.
I'm tapping out of this.
You can tell. I know that you're not a comic book person.
I don't remotely care about any of the things that he just said.
Well, okay.
Player Kelly has entered the game.
Yeah, this is your ballpark, Kelly, because you're more DC than I am. But I think it is interesting. Like, Suicide Squad and being R-rated was a foregone conclusion in my book. Birds of Prey kind of takes me a little bit by surprise that they're willing to go R-rated with that. But I mean, Joker being what it is, you know, I think that Warner Brothers is like, let's just lean into this older audience.
Yeah, but isn't that coming a little late? I mean, in the Birds of Prey camp, I mean, isn't it? I've watched enough random YouTube chatter to know that hasn't that movie kind of morphed into essentially a Harley Quinn movie with some other people involved? Like, isn't that like the subtitle? It's like Birds of Prey, the something of Harley Quinn, you know what I mean? I mean, they got Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, and, you know, you know, that
I do like Margot Robbie. Yeah, so I mean, I'm okay with that. I don't think it's that late in the game.
I mean, I'm just like, it seems like Joker was always conceived as this super edgy, dark thing. Right. There's no way it wasn't R. Same thing like Deadpool. It's like there's just no way.
No way, yeah.
Birds of Prey, it kind of seems like they were developing it, then it's like Joker did well. And it was like, oh shit, maybe throw some fucks in there.
Show some fucks and a couple of sex scenes and throw it out the door. You might be right. I don't know. I haven't heard rumors of reshoots or anything for this one, so it may have been, you know, they may have added some CGI blood or something. I don't know. But I don't think it'll affect what the premise of the movie is supposed to be anyways, because, I mean, that character, Harley Quinn was also in Suicide Squad, which, yes. You know, I would have.
I didn't see that movie either.
With, you know, thank God. But, I mean, I don't think the first Suicide Squad was R-rated, but it could have easily have been R-rated. If they had just, I guess, leaned in a little bit more on the edginess that it was flirting with. So I think Birds of Prey is probably going to end up being okay as an R-rated movie. Suicide Squad, I think, with James Gunn at the helm, I think that's going to be a good, solid R-rated action comedy movie. I don't know, Kelly, what are your opinions? You're more the DC person than I am. You got mad at me the other day because I was decorating the set and like it was all Marvel stuff, and you're like, it's all Marvel.
Just,
I was like,
give me something. Just something.
Hey, get something in here. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't even know there was a difference. until we entered you can't not be on the internet and not know that now. But it's like 2013, Justin was like, I don't know who's in the what's it, you know,
who's
it's in like
the what's it, who shot who in the what's that?
Yeah, exactly. Hilariously, wasn't that a Simpsons reference?
Yeah, it was.
There you go. I you know. So what is it, Kelly?
Okay. No, I definitely agree. Birds of Prey. I could go either way. The rated R, we don't know yet. Suicide Squad, especially with, I think, James Gunn, he's. If you see anything outside his Guardian stuff, like his R-rated violent stuff, like Super, and that's what that one's called, right? Super.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, if you follow his Twitter,
So that, and then, so I agree. His radar, that being rated R, is a great idea. Birds of Prey, okay. I love Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, so Michael B. Jordan as Superman. They were rumoring this a while ago, I thought.
Yes.
But didn't Cavill come out recently and say, I'm still Superman?
Yeah, he's like, I still have the costume in my closet. Something like that.
That doesn't really mean
anything. Yeah, I know. I think it's a funny thing to say. I like Henry Cavill as Superman.
Yeah, I like to, you know, I mean, as much as, I had stuff to say about those movies he was in, but I had really not much problem with him at all.
Yeah, I mean, but I love Michael B. Jordan, and, you know, they killed off his character in the Marvel Universe, so.
Dumb.
Which was dumb, but.
I saw that movie, and I was like, oh, they're going to kill him? They killed all the cool villains in that movie.
Yeah, they did.
The main movie I wanted to see was a movie where those two guys get together and fight crime. I don't know why they're fighting crime, because they're criminals. Yeah, but, you know,
get together, like, and cause crime, even. Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I don't know, you know.
But yeah, so Michael B. Jordan as Superman, I would be super on board for that. I'm ready for that backlash too, internet. Because
you think that would happen? Beyond the Stormfront crew, do you think anyone would really
have
a problem?
Not in any measurable degree. I think people like Michael B. Jordan enough to where.
Even your garden variety racist.
Yeah,
is like,
even your garden
variety. It's okay. You know.
He's one of the good ones.
You said it.
I'm allowed to say it. You're not allowed to say it. I'm allowed to say it.
But anyway. Then. I haven't been caught up on Green Lantern, the comics and all, but Geoff Johns got me into the character. He's apparently behind a possible show, and I know he had something to do with the last movie, but I'm not holding him accountable for that.
Yeah.
I just need the buddy cop Green Lantern core one. Don't even have to use Hal. Use Guy Gardner. Use John Stewart. Just make it a buddy cop in space movie. Lethal Weapon in space. Get Shane Black to make it. I'm cool with that.
Okay. Green Lantern, I don't know shit about. I tried reading that comic as a kid. I told you this story once before.
Yeah, that's like every 90s comic, though.
No. Like I remember, so here's what...
My knowledge of Green Lantern is Super Friends. He was actually my favorite in Super Friends.
Really?
But his powers seemed to be like... he and Superman were comically overpowered.
Like, why do you need any of these other people?
It's like Black Manta, you know, Superman shoots lasers out of his fucking eyes. You know what I mean? Green Lantern has a ring and he can fly that can do whatever.
Conjure he's from fucking space.
You know, it's just like, and Black Manta just looks cool. I thought he was my favorite villain because he looked cool. But other than that, those guys had, they got nothing over there. You know what I mean? I was just like, why are these guys, why is this even happening? And you know, Batman is just like, what the fuck? You know? He's like, I can shoot a, he's basically like, you know, DC's Boba Fett. He's
exactly.
I can shoot a fucking thing out. You know what I mean? And I'm really dark. You know what I mean? I'm very brooding. You know, but it's like, Superman can go around the world so fast backwards that it goes back in time. That's how fucking powerful Superman is. And why is this, why is anyone a threat other than that weird nuclear man from Superman 4 or whatever?
I like how your worlds are all just kind of, you got the cartoon world and the movie world all
it's all the same for me.
It's all the same movie too.
Now, like, I don't know. Like, I remember, so I was a kid, I went to a comic shop, I was reading through some comics, I think it was Green Lantern. It might not have been Green Lantern.
It might not even have been.
It might not have been Green Lantern, but I'm pretty positive it was. I looked at it and I started opening it, and the character was sitting at a piano. He was playing the piano.
And he had like three extra green arms playing.
He was just sitting playing a piano. And the next panel, he starts bitching about his arthritis in his hand. And I was like, this guy sucks. I don't want to read about this dude. Like,
ironically, I actually have arthritis in my hand. That makes you want to read the
comic. That makes you want to read it
more. I'm like, wow, that's a comic I can relate to.
Yeah, but with arthritis in his hand. You're in that age range, man, where you can relate to that. Like, I was like 12 at the time. So I was like, fuck this. I'm gonna go read an Image comic where a dude has all sorts of razors coming off of him and shit. You know, so maybe my entryway to Green Lantern wasn't the best, but I'm sure if they make the movie that you want them to make, Kelly, that's probably the best way forward. Like, Green Lantern is such a weird character in general that, like, and I feel this way with like a lot of the more cosmic supernatural characters in any comic. Like, you can't try to make those guys seem real or plausible.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to lean into, you have to Thor Ragnarok that shit. Just lean into the supernatural, crazy cosmic elements of it.
Yeah, because the problem is like, I mean, when you have to create conflict for these characters, like, how do you create conflict for characters that are essentially invincible, that are fucking super magic, amazing, like gods, essentially? You know, it's like, well, they have to face off with another super amazing god from another part of the universe.
Right, and that's...
who showed up in a black hole and is basically everything this guy is, almost exactly, but evil.
But evil.
You know what I mean? And he takes so-and-so's girlfriend. And
it, I would rather watch the Buddy Cop movie. I'd rather watch Cosmic The Other Guys. Yeah. All right, what's next?
All right, next... Oh, yes. Castlevania, the animated show on Netflix, got renewed for season 3. Someone did send out a tweet saying it was going to pop up January 1st. And then they were like, that's not right. Including the director, Samuel Dietz, tweeted, ha, that's news to me. It would be scary considering we're still working on the last episode of the season.
Oh, man. Wait, so is it not coming in the next month then?
That's the thing. I actually couldn't pin down the date yet. I just know they had to like backtrack that December 1st one they were like talking about.
That's weird. Netflix is usually, they usually have the screws bolted down pretty tight on their release notifications. Like,
someone could have just made that shit up.
It was some weird thing called like Netflix Nordic. I think that's what I saw on Twitter, but it was a checkmark tweet.
I think that's an official Netflix thing. They probably just got like something. They fucked up.
People fuck up.
Did any of you, either of you guys watch the Castlevania?
I have not.
No, I have not. I figured you probably did, Devin.
Oh, yeah, I did. I watched the first couple of seasons, I guess.
Is it like, it's anime, right?
Yeah. It's, well, it's, it's, I guess it's American anime.
Oh, okay. Well, man, I might like it more.
That's racist.
That's not racist. It's like, sometimes I watch anime and I'm just kind of like, what?
Yeah, like, I get what you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying?
About.
I'm just like, I don't.
Did you like the games, Castlevania games?
Yes, I did, but I liked the ones everyone hates. I played the ones on N64. I thought they were great.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, me and that guy Greg, like, went to blows almost over his...
right.
I mean, I just, like... I think the Castlevania world's cool, and honestly, the show looked cool, but the fact that it was a cartoon, I heard that the seasons were only like 4 episodes long. I'm just like, I don't know.
I mean, that means it's not a big investment. It's not a heavy lift, but
I guess.
I think you should watch him. It took me a while to get into it. I believe Richard Armitage voices the main guy. I like him as an actor and as a voice actor. He also voices the voice of Wolverine in the Marvel Wolverine podcast, which I highly recommend. And I am a big advocate for casting Richard Armitage as Wolverine in the MCU movies. So,
and who is Richard Armitage?
He
refresh my memory.
Probably best know him as Thorin in the Hobbit movies. But
but what does he look like for real? What other movie has he been in?
Yeah, I don't want to sound racist, but all hobbits look alike to me. So, like.
Boy, it sure makes me nervous when someone starts a sentence with, I don't want to sound racist.
I was waiting for the good stuff on that one. Like, whenever somebody says, I don't want to sound racist, but inside I'm going, yeah, let me hear this. This is going to be good.
When someone says that, you know that siren from Kill Bill? That's what goes off in my head. Like, oh no.
Yeah, I forget what else. He's been in some other stuff. He's a great actor, though. I like him. He's the main voice in Castlevania. There's some other notable voice actors in it, too. I recommend watching it. I was keeping an eye out for a season 3 announcement, so this one kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, oh, I think they initially announced that it was going to drop today, like, which is December 1st. But
I ask you this. Does it capture the vibe of Castlevania? You know what I mean? Like those games, and I played the original ones on the Nintendo.
Yeah.
But I passed the ones on N64. But I will say this for the N64 games. They captured the vibe to me of the early Nintendo games. The music and the vibe was there. Does the show capture that or not?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So, like, it's not – it's a pretty dark show thematically. I don't think visually it's because, like, when I think of Castlevania, visually it's dark. Like, it's a dark castle. The color palette for especially the Nintendo games was pretty dark.
Yeah.
From what I can recall of the first couple seasons, it was kind of a glossy, and it may have just been the nature of the animation, which I don't want to make it sound like it was bad quality, but it seemed a little off to me. Like, the animation quality just seemed like a little, that kind of looks weird. I think it caught most of the vibe of Castlevania, but I don't know if there, maybe if, I don't know, maybe it could have been a little bit grittier visually, not so much thematically. I think thematically it caught the vibe of Castlevania. They actually did a really interesting thing with Dracula where they kind of made him more of a sympathetic villain, which is not Dracula at all in any of the games.
He just shows up at the end and you kill him.
Yeah, you fucking...
That's it.
Which, you know, you could fill in a lot of blanks there. You know, maybe Simon Belmont's just some thug that broke into his house and was like, who the fuck is this guy? And he just kills, he murders a man for no reason. But no, I still recommend it. I think it's a good show. And I was looking forward to it, so I'm kind of bummed that I have to wait a little bit longer now, but... C'est la vie. What's next on the docket?
One last story. Google's Stadia had a pretty okay what's going on ad. Devin, I think, enjoyed this the most, so I'll definitely let Devin describe what happened in this ad.
Well, let's just watch the ad real quick here.
Hi, I'm looking for...
Stadia?
What?
What Stadia? Stadia is only the newest, most logic-defying, mind-bending, absurd gaming platform on Earth! Forget boxes, forget consoles, just your games, your screens, and electric air.
And this electric air
is Stadia! Unlike consoles, Stadia doesn't take up any space. It makes no noise. It has no smell. Watch. Go find Stadia, boy. Don't worry. You'll never find it.
Okay.
You can play Stadia with this.
Stadia likes to party.
Up to 4K, 60 FPS.
Stadia is the games you're looking for.
Yeah. What?
He'll show us.
4K, 60 FPS.
With
Stadia. So, I think, this is interesting in a number of different ways. First of all, the vibe I got from that ad, we could talk about the Stadia in general a little bit, but the vibe I got from that ad was definitely like, early 90s Sega Genesis, like Genesis can what Nintendo or Genesis does what Nintendo don't, you know, and it's all super extreme. And it, and like, I think they were definitely leaning into the absurdism on that one.
Yeah, yeah, I liked it. I liked how it was kind of absurd.
And I like Reggie Watts.
But I like Reggie Watts a lot too. And I like in advertisements, I like hyperbole. You know what I mean? I don't like
this
when they
was all hyperbole.
I don't like when they try to like make a weird false connection with like, you know, relating to people.
Yeah.
Friends, family.
Like showing someone coming home with a bag of groceries.
Finger-picked guitar, yeah. You know what I mean?
And then they it's all like, sit down on the couch at the same time and pick up the controller. Like, yeah. No, this is just like, this was leading into like an acid trip hard.
I think, yeah, I was just like, this is the best fucking game console that you will ever see in your entire life. Like, to me, that's like, yeah, I gotta, these guys believe in their game console. I gotta.
Yeah. Or at least they.
At least they want to entertain me.
They know that they need to do something with this to like fucking.
Yeah.
I think the article was actually positing that this was a really bad, cringy ad, but I didn't get that sense from it at all. Like, I actually like the ad. I guess I could see maybe how somebody who doesn't enjoy fun would be cringe from
it.
Man. But
some people are just. You know, in this sphere, everything has to be so fucking serious.
And you could speak to this a little bit because internet. I gotcha. Well, we just had an amazing discussion that you're never going to hear about.
We can talk about, what were we talking about before that? Stadia.
The Stadia. Well,
let's
actually.
Let's figure a good way to segue out of the.
Well, you know, so the Stadia, like I was saying, the Stadia. So the Stadia, I believe. May have launched. I can't quite recall. I know a lot of reviews.
I'm
have
seeing
come out.
November 19th, which means it would have.
Okay, so it's been out for a little while now. Then, and reviews have been coming in on it, and the reviews for the Stadia have been kind of sort of mixed. Right,
I heard it wasn't ready for prime time. That's just what I heard.
Yeah. I used it. So the idea of the console is that you're playing and you're owning and playing all these games, you know, over the cloud. You're streaming them. But the games are also like 4K HDR support and all that sort of stuff.
60 frames per second.
60 frames per second, which I really want to try one of these things. I mean, first of all, I don't even have a TV that could take full advantage of that. Like, I don't have a 4K TV or anything like that. But, like, have there... And I think
we
Kelly,
get 300 subscribers though.
If we get
and watch out.
There's going to be a 4K TV right there. But
I'm going to wear a 4K TV
around my neck.
Yeah.
But Kelly, we actually talked about this not too long ago. Like the idea of streaming 4K, like for 4K film and whatnot, it makes more sense to own the physical media because the streaming, the reliability of the stream may not always be there, right?
Yeah, all the film nerds I know will hate to hear this, but just due to room and other stuff and couldn't spend the money, I got rid of pretty much all my physical discs, thousands I had.
Yeah.
But I said if I ever started getting 4K, if I ever got a 4K and started doing that, I would physically start getting the discs again because I think you have to.
Yeah. So I'm really curious about what the quality of those games streaming in 4K at 60 frames per second or whatnot.
Just think about the technological... like feet that is.
Oh, it's...
You are playing a game.
Yeah.
Watching the thing, you know, literally your platform or whatever, where movements are in the microsecond, you know what I mean? It's like...
Well, one of the chief concerns is that... For the chief concerns is that there was a little bit of a delay between, you know, the input and what you're actually getting a response from in the game. So, you know, that could be an issue maybe. And the fact that it's even close enough to still be playable is fairly remarkable. But I'm super curious about actually getting my hands on a system and playing this and trying
maybe
it out.
Maybe we should like get one
it's,
and try
it's,
it out. And
I think it's
a deep dive of a review of Stadia.
I think it's $130. So
yeah,
it's,
I saw $129. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like it doesn't, you know, destroy your bank account or anything like that. Not like buying a brand new PlayStation 4 or whatever on day one where it's like $500 or something. You know, it's got a
they
cheap...
really hit those early adopters, man. Yeah, like, you want this bad boy, it's almost $1,000.
Yeah, yeah. So at least the Stadia has that going for it. It's a pretty cheap cost of entry, relatively speaking. But, you know, I think I'm going to give it a shot. Like, I like that ad. I like that they're taking that swing. It's crazy. It has one of my favorite comedians in it. You know, I like the... I'm mixed on the idea of gaming, of cloud gaming.
Again,
because I actually do like owning my games. Like, I still have a bunch of old games that are hard to find, like super rare titles for, you know, PlayStation or my Saturn or anything like that. You know, and I can play them anytime I want. Like, no, like Sega barely exists anymore. Like, they still put out games, but they don't put out the volume of games they used to. They don't have a system anymore or whatever.
They're putting out movies now, Devin. They're putting Sonic the Hedgehog coming soon.
Yeah, but doing the thing movies. About it is, though, I think that, like, the physical...
Well, I never have to worry about my games disappearing.
Don't unless they're on any kind of light disc. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
That's true.
Which, you know, those are going to be gone. You know, I mean, the a burned disc doesn't last very long. A formerly made disc has a certain lifespan at which no longer.
Right.
Now, those old cartridges, you can put Asteroids in your fucking 2600 and play that bitch all day long. But, you know, anything on a CD, some PlayStation, from PlayStation 1 forward, Sega Saturn, Sega CD, anything like that, all that stuff is eventually going to deteriorate.
Right.
You're not going to own it anyway. So, I mean, you know, to me, this is just the future. The idea of, like, game consoles and stuff, I mean, that was a stopgap. But eventually, everything will be like
will
this.
Be, yeah. You'll That's
have
true.
A, you'll
it
have
will,
a controller.
It will eventually you know what I mean? Be that
you'll
way.
You'll plug your TV into a wall, and whatever you want to see, play, I just, or whatever
I just,
will come down
I just
the pipe.
Can't stand the idea, the fact that, you know, that I can purchase... I don't purchase a product anymore. I purchase the rights to enjoy the experience of that product for however long that person wants me to, you know? So it's not like, oh, I bought this iPad, so it's my iPad now. It's almost like, oh, I'm leasing this iPad from Apple until some guy comes by and grabs it from me because he doesn't want me to have it anymore. Like, I like the idea of still being able to own physical media or own a property that, you know, I want to revisit whenever the company decides that they don't want to support it anymore.
Well, I see what you mean, but it kind of goes back to the same thing we deal with music, right? I mean, if you're not going to give anyone anything more than just the physical disc, which will eventually deteriorate, right?
Yeah.
Just the you know, here you go. It's kind of like, again, I feel it's kind of like, what's the point in the long run? But I remember back in the day, in the 80s, when you got a video game, especially computer games, it came with all kinds of shit.
Oh, yeah, and I missed you know that. I mean? I missed
oh,
that.
Yeah.
I missed the manuals and the maps and
yeah.
all that other really cool shit.
I mean, make it a product. That's the thing, like vinyl with music. You know, it's like you buy a vinyl album, it's like a product.
Yeah.
Big. You know, you can see the art. You can open it up. There's all, you know, it's not just a CD with a little booklet. You know, it's like that's the reason. The minute they made it that disposable, you made the medium that disposable, well, you're really only headed one direction
right.
at that point. You know what I mean? I think games, there's probably a place for games to have physical product, you know, physical media, you know, where maybe it's part of it's physical and part of it's downloadable, but you actually get something for your, you know, you there's something that goes with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they kind of do that with your special game boxes and stuff like that. You know, I guess. I don't buy any of that stuff. But, you know, it's like if you buy this. But a lot of times they sell like weird skins like
yeah.
in the game. You know, it's like you get a special dagger
yeah,
that doesn't
sometimes
do dick. You know
sometimes,
I mean?
I mean, I know there's a company out there that creates boxes for digital download games. And I think some of them have stuff like manuals or
but like, dude, Ultima 5. For Apple II Plus,
yeah,
that shit had a cloth map.
Yeah,
it was cloth of the whole world. It had a little digital coin. Well, not digital coin. It had a coin. I don't know why it's digital coin. It had a coin that was like silver, and had like stuff on the front and back.
Yeah,
you know, and it had a booklet. The booklet was like aged paper. The whole booklet. Was like it was like embossed. It had like
yeah.
texture to it. It wasn't just like printed age paper. Like it was just a picture of what it was actually literally like
age paper.
This kind of like special paper that was kind of aged. Oh, it was amazing.
That must have been fucking awesome.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And we've completely lost that. It seems
I would
to
like
some
to
degree
get back
as a culture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just
as a
like
culture.
Yeah, I mean just yeah. I mean, everything is just so
it's craftsmanship
disposable. Yeah,
yeah
you
it's
know?
Craftsmanship.
I mean, that made it so cool opening the box and playing it. You know, even though I wasn't like I got out the coin every time I played
yeah.
it, but it was part of the experience, you know? Anyway, I'm old.
We're all old here.
Yeah.
All right. Is that it for news?
Yeah, it's all news. So, what's going on with our buddy Mando in episode 4 of The Mandalorian titled, what is it? Sanctuary.
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 The new episode of The Mandalorian dropped. Episode 4. Sanctuary. So we talked about the last episode last time. We loved it. It was an awesome shootout. really changes the direction of the story, and we pick up where we left off there with the Mandalorian and little baby Yoda trying to find a place to hide out because they just really went sideways with the guild. They got to find a place to hide out. That's the best putting it lightly. It's putting it very lightly. Yeah. This episode, I liked it. There are elements of it I really liked. I do think that it was, and it's just by the nature of how epic the last episode was.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a step back.
It was a step back for sure.
But I mean, it's just the nature. That's just the ebb and flow and the ups and downs of storytelling across the season,
it
right?
can't all be.
They're not all going to be
super
epic.
Epically awesome.
But this was still a good episode.
It'd be exhausting if that was the case. Yeah, it was fine. It was totally fine. This was probably the closest thing so far. I was talking to my wife about it. I was like, this is the first episode that kind of felt more like TV to me.
Yeah. You know, this well, it was definitely kind of
like
show.
Almost like Star Trek The Next Generation vibe where
they
come
went to
the
planet. There's a little small village.
Yeah, there's a village. They help them work some stuff out. And I mean, I know this plot line is is an extremely rote plot line, you know, out of Westerns and samurai movies. Basically, this the plot of Seven Samurai.
Exactly.
You know, and so, I knew this was coming. Like, I'd seen enough stills of the, you know, knowing what kind of show The Mandalorian was. I was like, at some point, he's going to stop on a planet and help some villagers learn to fight. You saw people with the spears.
Yeah.
You know, immediately the whole entire story of it. And this was basically just that.
Right.
I mean, I think in the long arc, it's basically to prove to The Mandalorian there's really no place he can take Baby Yoda where he'll
be
okay.
He'll never be safe.
He'll never be safe.
Yeah.
He's got to go after the guys that are going after Baby Yoda.
Right.
He's going to have to, you know, nip it in the bud.
So,
I think that was the point of the episode.
So, so what happens is he gets on this, he finds this planet that he thinks is isolated enough. It doesn't have, you know, spaceports or whatever. So he decides he's going to hang out or hide out on this planet. So, you know, and this is another episode like, Baby Yoda is just, you know, taking the world by storm.
He's the Beatles.
Like,
he's the Beatles of this new of our new generation.
Yeah, like I get why Disney wanted to keep it under wraps, you know, and not try to get.
Man, they did a great job of that,
and they did a fantastic job.
No one saw that coming, dude.
But man, there are people that are legitimately angry that they can't buy Baby Yoda stuff for Christmas right now. Like, legitimately furious.
Little bastard's cute as can be.
He is unbelievably adorable.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it turns out. Baby, you know, Yoda, you know, not so cute.
Yoda, baby, not so cute.
Baby Yoda. Extremely
cute. Fucking adorable.
It's the fact that his eyes are so big.
His eyes are big and he's got like the little puffy cheeks and all that, you know.
Yeah.
It's an adorable little puppet. So, you know, he goes down on this planet and I got to say this. We need a counter for how many references we make to this shit. Basically, The Mandalorian just straight up turned into The Witcher. Like, full-blown Witcher. Like, he goes on to Velen. He's got little baby Ciri with him. Like, a couple of villagers. Excuse me, Master Witcher. We pulled our coin together. Help us with these bandits. And he's like,
it's not enough.
I don't do that. I hunt monsters. I don't get involved in wait a second. We gotta hide out from the Wild Hunt. Maybe I'll come help you.
Yeah.
He goes to the fucking village. It's the entire same setup, you know. So that's basically
an extremely rote storyline.
It's a rote storyline, but just the way that the character is, and you know, the dilemmas and all of that, I just couldn't help. That's one part. So he is on the planet. He gets approached by a couple of villagers. You see, the episode starts off pretty awesome because it shows villagers, you know, they're fishing and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then just a group of bandits just come in and ravage everything. And, you know, mother and her child are hiding in the river with a little basket over them. And like, I forget who does the soundtrack, but I love the music that was playing at that moment.
Ludwig Göransson.
Yeah. Pretty awesome shit. So
it's funny. I've heard the theme. I understand. Like, I've come around a lot more on the music than I was in the very first episode we talked, and I was like, I don't know. I think it's like, you know, they're trying to like make that it's like they're working that that's kind of like the main. You know, your main kind of Mandalorian theme, right? What I mean?
It's
then it breaks into the boom, 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 you know what I mean?
Yeah, it starts off with that bass, like, and then, like, it has its homages to John Williams.
Yeah, it does.
But it's definitely trying to do its own
and
thing.
It does. And in this episode in particular, there was one section where I was like, this is probably the most John Williams as we've got musically.
Yeah.
There was a section where they're getting on the cart, maybe towards the very end when they're leaving, going back to the Razor Crest.
Yeah.
And they're playing the da-da-da-da, and there was a bunch of extra flute and strings and stuff going with it, you know what I mean? I was like,
yeah.
This is like, I think they're trying to hit that note. You know, this is obviously the Mandalorian's theme, right. You know what I mean? And it was cool, yeah. You know.
So the Mandalorian, he goes to this, he lands and he's trying to find a place. He goes to a tavern and he sees like a woman that looks suspicious. So he's sitting there with Baby Yoda. He's tossing money around to, you know, get information and have the lady look after Yoda. So because the woman disappears, he's got to track her down, figure out what's up. So he leaves the tavern to find her. And this is the other part where I was like, this is just the fucking Witcher. Like, he turns on Witcher vision and he sees her footprints.
Oh, you're right. Oh my gosh, you're so right. And it's red, just and like the red. Witcher too.
Yeah, and he's walking around and it's just like...
Use your Witcher senses to find...
And then like the track's in, just like in the game. And I'm just waiting for him to like, so is he going to pick up her scent now?
Or he goes, that's strange. Yeah, it's like you're waiting for it. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Geralt's like, inner monologue.
Ends here.
Yeah. Ends here.
But then, so like she comes out, she fights
Something
him.
Something must have happened.
She fights him and they fight to a draw and then Yoda's there looking adorable. Like this puppet. This should have been called.
It was good staging. Like, been, they look up and he's standing there with a cup. It was nice. Yeah.
This show should have been called Baby Yoda featuring the Mandalorian, honestly.
That's kind of what it's turned into.
What it's kind of turning into. So he finds out, talking to her, that, you know, she's an ex-shock trooper for the Rebellion. She's hiding out on this planet. And, you know, basically this planet's not big enough for both of them.
Well, they're hiding out from the same people. And so it's like, you know, she's like, hey, man, I was here first.
Yeah. So Mandalorian's on the way out. That's when the townspeople come up to him. You know, they know he's a Mandalorian. They recognize the armor.
That's the thing. Mandalorian armor really advertises.
Being inconspicuous when you're walking around in that shit.
People are like, that guy's a badass. Yeah, that guy. I need a badass.
Exactly. So. You know, so
it's like being a Witcher, you know. Exactly, you got the white hair, like, the fucking eyes, the two swords.
His helmet is basically his medallion. Yeah, you know, you see that. You're like, okay, I know what's going on with this dude.
And that's what I felt about the Witcher when I was playing it. I was like, you're basically like Boba Fett if Boba Fett had Jedi powers.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
You know, it's like it doesn't have guns. It's got swords, but he talks like Boba Fett, the original Boba Fett. Like, go back and watch the original Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, because he talks just like the Witcher. And, you know, you walk around, you go hunt people down, the people pay you.
Yeah.
You do it for the coin. I don't make judgments. I just,
exactly.
If I have to choose between one evil or another, I don't choose at all.
It's all the same. Like, and I was thinking, watching this, like, man, like the Witcher is really like the perfect marriage between a Jedi and a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
that's why I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah,
it's
is
like,
why
you enjoyed it. I'm like a Mandalorian. I'm like Boba Fett. If Boba Fett had swords, which are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And could Jedi mind trick people and force push the shit out of them, and then also set them on fire like a fucking Mandalorian. Yeah. I was just like, so if you're a fan of both Mandalorians and Jedi, I highly recommend The Witcher 3.
Anyways,
we've kind of veered off into Witcher 3 territory.
It happens all the time. It does. But like this episode really pushed it on you, like between all of the other similarities. Anyways, so like the setup. We mentioned it before. It is very Seven Samurai. It's very we have a group chat going with our friends, and one of them mentioned Wild Wild West.
Yeah.
You know, it has a lot of that vibe. Like, there's a lot of the, you know, we're being set upon by bandits. Please help us, sir. Like, okay, I'll teach you.
The plot of the Three Amigos.
Yeah, exactly. Three Amigos, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So he gets the coin from these villagers, and he uses it to buy... what's her name? The character's name?
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune, by her services. So they're all on board. They're going through training these villagers and whatnot. And then they have to figure out what exactly they're going up against. So they go out to the woods. Again, he uses his Witcher senses.
Yeah.
And again, it's exactly a line of the game. Like, about 15 or 20 people came around this area. You know, it's the exact same thing. You know, but then they see a giant footprint. And it is a footprint of an AT-ST,
yeah,
which in my opinion, was the highlight of this episode.
Yeah, the AT-ST was really awesome.
That was really fucking cool.
It was cool to see it brought back. It was cool to see it kind of like a post-Empire thing where they've just like turned this military hardware into their own.
Like, yeah, there's like a warlord that took it for his own personal use.
It was cool.
Not only that, but also you get to see, like, in other Star Wars, you know, fare with AT-STs and AT-ATs, like, you see them in the context of fighting other like vehicles, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the Rebellion versus the Empire. You know, the X-Wings are flying around the AT-ATs and shit like that.
Yeah.
And this one, you see it go up against just a normal group of people.
Well, honestly, we've already seen that. I mean, that was the thing in Return of the Jedi.
I don't remember that then.
Oh, well, Ewoks.
That's a little different.
That was the thing I thought was so hilarious. She's like, I've seen those things take out an entire battalion. I was like, actually, I've seen 40 teddy bears take out like 6 of them. So they couldn't be that badass.
Yeah, seriously.
They beat them with logs and ropes, dude. You know
the
what
Ewok
I mean?
Thing is a little different. Different, but like this, like you saw one go up against like because the Ewoks were at least warriors, right? Like
yeah,
they were, like, so they at least had training. But these guys, they didn't have any training, so they were just at this thing's mercy.
They had a good plan. I liked how they had a plan.
They had a plan.
There was an old movie, and I don't know the name of it. And I saw it, like on like Channel 11 during the day, and it was like this whole movie. It was old, and it was about this guy. Who was like, it was a German U-boat, and he was like, basically it was like he had like a boat or a crane or something, and he was trying to get these Germans. They were in this like water or right around, and he was like a fisherman or something, and he spends the entire movie like playing cat and mouse with these Germans.
Yeah.
And he finally drops. He gets a torpedo somehow, and he drops it from a crane onto their U-boat, and it like ends up sinking his ship as well, or his boat as well.
Yeah.
He dies to kill. Oh, it's and it reminded me of that a little bit, in the sense that they had like, you know, this thing was out there. They had to get it somewhere to dig a huge hole. And
yeah,
it was like, and it was cool. I don't know what that movie was, but if anyone who's watching this does, put it in the comment section. But
their plan was basically so they were going to lure it. They dug the hole. They filled it, I guess, with water. They were going to lure it to fall in there. And then once it was on its side, just destroy it.
Everyone who's seen it in Return of the Jedi knows those things don't fall so well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The minute they fall, fucking toast.
I got to say, the Empire... their engineering department is just, all of their engineering is just riddled with design flaws. Like, they need to go back to the drawing board on a lot of their stuff.
Well, I mean, like, things like the AT-ST and the AT-AT have no real purpose.
No.
In a world where you can have things float. I mean, like, they've mastered the technology of floating stuff.
Yeah.
Why have anything walk?
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Especially wildly imbalanced things.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because it looks cool. I mean, that's the thing. People that, like, want to nitpick Star Wars, like, you know, in Last Jedi, the bombs fell out of the bottom of those bombers. Bombs don't fall in space. It's like, you're an idiot, dude. Because none of this, you know, we are through the looking glass when it comes to Star Wars. None of that shit really applies.
You know, one of the first things, I do remember this as a kid, one of the first things I heard someone bitch about Star Wars was that, you know, why are the lasers making sounds in space? There's no air.
It's cool.
And I remember thinking as a kid, like, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm glad it makes sounds.
Yeah,
it sounds cool.
If it didn't, it would be fucking lame.
Yeah, it would just be silent.
Yeah. They're flying through space and things are flashing and things are blowing up and you don't hear any sounds.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
what's happening? Where are the sounds?
Sound
drop out?
Yeah.
Can you imagine how like less fun the ending of A New Hope would be if it was just... you just see it just go without the whole boom.
The explosion of the Death Star, it's just silent.
Yeah, just
exactly. You know, I mean, that can be used to cool effect in like 2001 or whatever. Those are completely different, you know, applications. And it's like, give me a break. The sounds and how awesome they are part of what's so great about Star Wars.
Right.
And people that like complain, like, again, how are they walking around in their ships? How is their gravity the Millennium Falcon? They just, you know, they don't, you don't ever see anyone ever lose gravity in any episode of Star Wars, no matter how much they get shot at or whatever, you know? I mean, who gives a shit? You know, it's fucking Star Wars.
It's a space fantasy, so suspend your disbelief. It's not sci-fi here.
Yeah, but, you know. Anyway, that kind of shit just bums me out. Anyway, but it was cool. Oh, well, I was going to say about, I think I basically, you know. I know what I was going to say. One thing I really liked about this episode was I liked how there was just some like cool mixtures of like Star Wars tech and the thing, like when they're picking the krill, they're doing the krill thing. There's like this cool ass droid like in the back. And it's like, it looks totally like they're, you know, village is super primitive and shit, but at the same time, they still have droids and shit.
Like, even the villagers, when they rolled up to his ship, they were on one of those floating things piloted by a droid.
Yeah.
So it was like,
I love that. That's to me so Star Wars. You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, it's like, okay, it's a backwater village, but I mean, it's still Star Wars. So there's still droids that are helping out. They're helping with some of the stuff around here, but it's not like, it's not like a spaceport or anything.
Yeah, like, that's the thing though. It's like in Star Trek, They wouldn't, if they were that primitive, they wouldn't have something awesome.
Or they would have their own weird primitive facsimile of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It was, you know, you would never usually see like a complete mixture of like, you know, that low tech.
Right.
Unless it was one of those weird village like episodes where like a computer controls everything and provides them with a utopia and they all live like it's, you know.
We got to do Star Trek TNG on this show. Like, we have a lot to say about that too.
But yeah, I really loved that droid in the back. I thought, I just thought that was a great touch. You know, it was like, that was really cool.
So they train these villagers. I like how he goes, does anyone here know how to shoot? And then that woman raises her hand, and like it shows her shooting, and she's just hitting the target like boom, 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 boom. Yeah. You know, it's like, okay, she's murdered people.
Yeah.
This woman has definitely taken lives at some point in the past. It's like, you don't live in a backwater village like this and shoot a gun that effectively. Like, everybody else could barely even hold the damn thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know if, you know, what that pokes towards, but you know, it was a neat little thing to see.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of like, why didn't he just go get in the Razor Crest and then go strafe that fucking, you know, that AT-ST? I mean, he's got huge guns on the Razor Crest. You know, maybe he thought that it would be too much.
Because then the episode would have been like 10 minutes long.
Well, you're exactly right. That's the real reason. I mean, I'm sure maybe he thought it would draw them too much attention, or they were trying to lay low a little bit, you know, because that's what he says at the end. He's like, we made a big ruckus.
Yeah.
People are going to be, you know, heading this way.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's, you know,
that's so probably the best explanation. Yeah. Then, like, he didn't want to draw attention to him being there by, holy shit, there's a spacecraft that's blasting
shooting
a bunch
some
of villages
shit from low orbit or whatever. Or
just so they encounter the tribe. I forget what the tribe is called. I'm really bad with Star Wars names. I can't remember
The bandits.
Yeah, they had a name.
I don't remember.
I remember. I watched it with subtitles. So
yeah. Oh really?
Yeah, they were actually named something, but they have this encounter. The AT-ST comes out, and you know, it takes some doing because AT-ST actually notices that it can't go any further without falling, so it stops. And they're like, ah, damn, we have to figure out a way to lure. And it turns into like this pitched battle that, you know, eventually they do get it on its side, and Mandalorian runs up. He throws like a grenade or something in there, and it just explodes, and you know, all the bandits run into the woods. So they have their victory, and after this all settles, you know, I guess some time has passed. It's been a couple weeks or so, they say.
Yeah.
And it's kind of an idyllic setting. Like, it seems like you know, this would be a good opportunity for him to, like, you know, just settle down. Like, she's trying to convince him to take the helmet off, you know, and just, you know, you can keep your gear in case you need it, but just take the helmet off. And you know, Baby Yoda seems to really love it here. And he's playing with all the kids and whatnot. And it's a cute moment and whatnot. But he's like, can't do it. And you see,
I'm a Mandalorian.
Yeah. Then you see like someone in the woods has one of those fobs, and he creeps up on like the outskirts of the village.
It's a good little cinematic way to let the audience know without having to do some bullshit dialogue.
Exposition,
you know?
Yeah.
It's just like anyone with one of those fucking fobs is a bounty hunter.
Yeah. So like you see him pop his scope up and he's moving and he's got Baby Yoda right in his sights.
And the collective, you know, a nation inhales collectively.
A nation, the planet.
Yeah.
A planet holds its collective breath. And then you hear a gunshot. You see, like, birds fly up into the air. And like, the Mandalorian's like, where'd that come from? You know, he runs over. And you see the bounty hunter. And he drops. And behind him is
Cara Dune.
Cara Dune holding a smoking gun.
Took him out.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. Okay, like, you got your point across. Like, the whole point is you're not safe here.
Yeah.
You'll never be safe anywhere.
I have to wonder how those tracking fobs work.
That's another question. Yeah, I mean, like,
again, who really cares? But I have to wonder how they work.
It is curious because they don't. It's not like they're just physical things with a little light on it. So
I think you probably have to be on the planet. Where you have to be on the planet, maybe where the thing is. Like, so, you have to be a certain close to
it's
it.
It's like, maybe. I guess, how do you? So we're getting into like some technical implementations here. Like, how do you actually configure it to track a specific person? Do you need that person's DNA in it or something? Or because it was tracking, because they asked, like, who is this tracking? And it was like, it was tracking him, and they point to Baby Yoda. And I was like, okay, so they have this fob. It's not like, it doesn't have like a screen or anything on it. It's not like it has anything that's
it's
displaying.
It's nice that it doesn't have a screen. Does it need a screen?
Yeah, it's just a red light that beeps. So it's like there's this question of like, how is it being, what's the actual implementation of how this thing is set to track any specific particular person?
Yeah.
You know? Doesn't really matter. All you need to know is that these guys are tracking.
Yeah, I just like wondered, you know, from in A New Hope, they put a tracking device on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah,
and the idea is that tracking device was never actually deactivated, and so that is how Han and Chewie were able to find the Millennium Falcon in The Force Awakens when she finally flies it up and you know what I mean, and they show up almost immediately. You know, and he's like, I mean, supposedly, you know, he knew. The funny thing is that when you go back and you watch A New Hope, this is something that you can't unsee after you watch A New Hope. And this actually occurred to me very late, like maybe within the last couple of years. So they leave. They get away from the Death Star, right?
Yeah.
And she's like, that was too easy. They're obviously tracking us, you know what I mean? He's like, easy. He's like, no, that wasn't it. We escaped, you know? She's like, they would never let us escape. Why in God's name, if she thinks that's the case, do they then fly right to the Rebel base? Why?
Like,
well, the answer is because originally in the script, the Death Star didn't follow them. They flew to the Rebel base, and they get their there was no ticking clock. They added that in editing later to give the movie an extra, you know? But like, you know, it's like, why would you do that? Why would you fly right there when, you know, they could just jump to hyperspace? And, you know, I think in the original concept, maybe the movie, the Death Star couldn't jump to hyperspace. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, who knows, you know? But they added that layer. And I was watching, it was a YouTube video, and it was talking about how Star Wars changed in the edit. I think it's called How Star Wars Was Saved in the Edit or Made in the Edit. Because originally when they cut it together, they weren't very happy with it. It was like,
yeah,
there's a lot of, you know. And actually, George Lucas's wife, I think her name is Marcia Lucas, was very, very instrumental in like coming up with that whole sequence where the Death Star transports, and they added all that. Because before they were like, okay, they flew back, they get their ships, they go, they try to blow the Death Star up. But they said, A, it didn't really have any kind of ticking clock on it. You know what I mean? There wasn't any kind of like urgency because, you know, they were just going to blow up the Death Star. And B, it kind of seemed like the Death Star was just out there and all the rebels just went to blow it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they were attacking instead of defending themselves, you know? And so in adding that segment, because the same person was like, you know, there are several logical issues with this. And I actually had this thought before I saw this video. I was like, why would she fly back? And I just like, well, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's the rebellion.
Yeah,
when
I was a kid and I watched it, you know what I mean? And even when I was an adult multiple times for years and years and years, I never even really noticed that. I was just like, you know, and it didn't really occur to me. I didn't think about it like that. But then I was like, it's funny, you know, why would she fly right back to the Rebel base when they ask her repeatedly, where is the Rebel base? She leaves.
And she thinks that they're being tracked.
She literally, Alderaan gets blown up because she will not reveal the location of the Rebel base. She leaves, says we're being tracked, you know what I mean? And then flies right to the Rebel base. But, you know, but so, and then they're like, well, why do they just not shoot through the moon? They've got a planet-destroying gun. Why do they have to wait for the moon to get out of the way before they can blow up Yavin? You know what I mean? Because it's like, Yavin in, you know, it's like, you know, Yavin in range in, you know, 4 minutes or whatever. It has the big thing they're looking at, you know what I mean? They're like, they could have come out of hyperspace behind the moon. They could come out wherever they wanted, yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you want to argue they couldn't come out wherever they wanted, they could have easily just shot right through the moon and then shot it again. But, you know, again, you can be like, well, maybe, you know, because that wasn't part of the original script. That wasn't a, that was completely constructed in the edit.
How did we get to this?
Well, I was talking about tracking.
Okay.
So, tracking Baby Yoda. Yeah. It's like, it seems to me like they had to put a tracking device, on the Millennium Falcon to be able to track it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then they talk about that a lot in The Last Jedi. Hyperspace tracking is something they're working on, and that's how they're able to track where they
jump. You know, it's interesting when you, now that I think about it, like, so. Obviously, somebody, maybe if you're talking about putting a tracking device on or even potentially in, you know, Baby Yoda, like, obviously, the baby was being tracked the whole time. Because even when he goes and rescues her, when he's leaving, like, all the bounty hunters' things start, because he says to Carl Weathers, like, how many people had fobs? He's like, everybody in here had one.
And that's what,
so,
exactly.
So, like, when all those things, yeah, they reactivated it, so... Obviously, it was established earlier on that this baby's being tracked by these fobs. So anyone who may have had that fob before probably has it still, and it's reactivated. And now
the question is, how though? Did is it a possibility where that bounty hunter just happened to stop on that planet and it went off, or does it somehow track them? There's no way it could track them through space. You know what I mean?
Maybe they'll iron it out later. I mean, there was a bunch of bounty hunters. Maybe they all just decided to pick some planets to hunt.
Maybe so.
And this guy happened to be on the right one.
Maybe that guy landed on it and found it. Or maybe he was already there when they showed up and his tracking fob went off and he thought, well, fuck, there's someone here to track. Who knows?
Maybe questions to be answered again. Later. Maybe something that doesn't matter.
I really don't care. It's not going to affect my enjoyment of the show one way or the other. Right. But, you know, it's interesting.
So at the end of it, the Mandalorian decides that he and Baby Yoda have to hightail it out of there. You know, there's no place safe for him. And you leave on a really kind of sad image of Baby Yoda being taken away from a place that he was really having a good time at. So it's really this kind of felt like one of those chess piece episodes from Game of Thrones or whatever. You know,
Like,
there's really nothing in this episode that advances the core story forward.
Well, I think that's not completely true, but yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I mean, that for him to, it's, I think, and I'm just guessing, I have no idea what's next, but for him to go, okay, I have to actually take this fight to them.
Yeah, you know okay, I mean? That's true.
He has to know that there is no other recourse. And this was essentially, they found the most backwater world he could find, a village in the middle of nowhere. They actually say, it's in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean? They basically tell the audience, like, hey, guys, this is remote, you know? And it's he's not safe there. A bounty hunter found him within weeks of them landing. And it's like, there's only one way to deal with this.
Right.
You know?
So I guess in that regard, yeah, it actually does set up for the next turn that this series is going to take. Episode 4, so we only have 4 more episodes left.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the series, it's really, I mean, every episode has a very distinct thing that happens in
it
that like moves.
I mean, I guess it kind of has to. It's only 8 episodes and most of them are about 30 to 40 minutes long.
Yeah. So. And they don't, there's not a lot of chaff in this, in this stuff. That, you know, they're moving, you know.
So this was, I think, a pretty awesome episode. I do think it was a step back from the prior one, but I mean, it kind of just the necessity of it. Like, you're not gonna follow up an epic Mandalorian battle with something that's even cooler right away. Like, it's the ebb and flow of storytelling. So this was a cool episode. It was I liked it just because it basically turned into The Witcher 3.
The funny thing was I missed the fact that those were red. That is such a I have to wonder if that was.
Oh man, this.
You like, think that was a nod? You think that like
there I was feel any, like, it's a, like I almost feel like this entire series is a nod. Like the Mandalorian definitely feel like even in that episode you were like that's such a Geralt line.
Oh, I gotta get one of those.
Like the whole thing kind of. Like his mannerisms, like how he sighs all the time. He's always like, yeah. You know, it's like the whole thing kind of feels like we're going through those motions again. So, like, and I'm okay for it. I'm here for it. I almost feel sorry that, you know, The Witcher's coming out, like, way after this. You know, it's like, oh, man, they upstaged you on your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think The Witcher, for a lot of people, is a deep cut, I guess.
It's a deep cut.
A lot more, like, they don't, when they see that, they don't. I mean, I have to wonder if someone had played specifically with those footsteps, they could have made those any color. And red, but red is like heat,
red is,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe there was some blue, red. I can't remember, you know what I mean? But it was just, that was so specific, you know what I mean? I mean, it's probably not, but you know, whatever. It felt on some level like there was a nod, you know, to the Witcher.
And I'm here for all of that.
Yeah, and you know, it's such an obscure reference at this point, you know.
All right. Well, we've got four more episodes left. I'm all on board with it.
I just think about that last episode, right? Not the one we just watched, the one before that.
It's like, yeah.
It's got to get
the sin.
Yeah, the sin. So the season finale or the penultimate episode, you know, will be more epic than that, right?
It'll almost have to be.
Yeah. And that was pretty epic, you know? I mean, I guess it's like when you think about something like Game of Thrones, they took epic to like
whole new heights.
Yeah. But just other complete levels, and I don't think we're going to see anything that insane in season one of this.
No,
but you know,
yeah, but this was still a good. I mean, even the battle was really cool too. I mean, it had its when the AT-ST came, like you saw the eyes marching in the darkness. It was coming out of the forest. Yeah. That was a pretty cool shot. Like I thought there was a lot of epicness. And this episode was directed by Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yes, it was.
You know, Ron Howard's daughter. I think this was actually her first, is her directorial debut.
No, I think she made a short film not too long.
Oh, did she? I wasn't familiar with that. Well, I mean, this is a really great episode for someone that hadn't directed anything on this scale or scope before.
Yeah, well, you know.
So, awesome.
Her dad's Ron Howard.
Her dad's Ron Howard, so she learned some things.
Yeah.
I think it's the only episode she's done this for this season. Some of the other ones will be repeat directors, so.
Yeah, who's next, I wonder? It's funny that
Filoni's coming back next episode.
Oh, interesting.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
He's also writing the next one too.
Really?
Yes.
I bet you there's probably some Mandalorian lore in that one, probably pretty heavy, I would imagine.
Well then, we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, because Filoni is like, you know, he's your lore guy. Anytime you want to go deep, I mean, he's basically like George Lucas's protege. And you know, he was involved in a lot of Clone Wars and Rebels. I mean, those are his shows, and he wrote a lot of that stuff.
Awesome.
So,
well, we might get some very deep cuts in that one then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know. So it'll be interesting to see. And then, who's after him? Oh, it's the girl who did episode 3, right?
No, she's doing 7.
Oh.
What's his Rick? Funawa, is that you say the one who did the episode, second episode?
Oh, okay, cool. So it's repeat. They're gonna
Those two, then Deborah Chow, then Taike.
Ah, I'll be interesting to see. I'll be interesting to see his aesthetic in this setup.
Well, we'll have to wait a while for that one, but we'll be back next week though with actually, next week might be a little late too. We'll see. Got to play that one a little bit by ear, but join us. There'll be other stuff to check out on the channel for sure. So like and subscribe,